come on and spend time with Joe's people. Just slacking near the old cathedral. I'm so glad I'm one of Joe's people. And we'll have a lot of laughs, be closer to the Lord. Just chill out now with Joe's people.
Ladies and gentlemen of the interwebs, welcome to Joe's People. It's a Catholic podcast, but it's not totally lame. Tonight on the big show, Dolores and Joe laugh it up with Deacon Guadalupe of St. Mary Cathedral. He talks about the upcoming Corpus Christi procession and opens up about his life as a sheriff's deputy. It's another installment of In Your Face Catholicism. And now, here's the man who makes me a better Catholic. Wait, I'm not saying that. Aren't you the one who yelled, "Hey, look over there," to Lot's wife?
Say the line.
All right. And now the man who makes me a better Catholic, Mr. Joe Geisler.
All right. Well, thanks for that great intro. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Joe's People. So joining me this week is a show regular, Dolores Diaz.
Yo.
See, I call you Diaz, but it's actually Diaz, isn't it?
The accent is on the I, so it's Diaz.
Diaz. Diaz.
Diaz. It's on the I. It's not Diaz. It's Diaz.
Diaz. Okay. Yeah. I think my phone may actually pronounce your name better than I do.
Because
when I do the voice dialing, it calls you Diaz. So that's better than what I usually do.
That's okay.
But anyway, so yeah. So how's it going this week?
You know, it's going okay. I played an awesome show last night. That was cool.
With Dolores is a drummer.
Yeah, Barisa Kane. Had a CD release party at Scottish Rite Theater, and I got to go on stage with my friends, Barisa Kane, and a bunch of other drummers on a couple of songs, and that was awesome. So.
Now, what type of genre of music is that?
Oh, geez, I don't even know how you could even kind of, like, classify them. I mean, they sound...
So what sort of instruments do they play?
I mean...
They have to play some kind of, or are they a cappella?
So, no, I mean, there's... It sounds kind of like electronic, because there is like, even though Josh is an awesome drummer, he also has like a drum machine, but he actually is like playing on like this electronic drum pad at some points, and then there's a sampler that's used, and then there's keyboards, and so it ends up sounding like a little like spacey electronically, but it's not like just electronic. It's kind of hard to describe.
No, it's a mix.
It was really cool. And then I got to have the cool, like, you know, this kind of like, Braveheart-esque, makeup on my face because the band does that. So that was fun.
Did you get any pictures of it?
Actually, I don't think I.
Oh, come on. You got pictures.
I don't. Yeah. I think somebody took a picture.
Track them down.
Yeah. I hope somebody took a picture.
You have like a temporary tattoo or something.
I do. And that was from Ruth's birthday. I live in a co-op, folks.
Oh, okay. So you got
to. So one of my buddies had a, and the co-op had a birthday. And
see, now your co-op is almost like the early church. Like they used to live
that's
in a co-op.
Exactly
sort of
what
like
the co-op is. The co-op is exactly like
it's not quite
the early church.
It's not quite as Christian as the early church. But yeah, that's the, you know, that theory of living together, you know, having fellowship. And all that, so.
Right.
So now I wanted to bring up, sometimes I don't talk about the news, but I do talk about, like, the church in general. The one thing I was curious about, there was Vatican statistics on the size of the church and the growth and of the church. It said that the number of Asian and African Catholics, it has been, this is from the Catholic News Agency, the number of Asian and African Catholics is growing, quickly, but the church in Europe is still shrinking, which I guess we've seen that. The total number of Catholics that were baptized in 2011 had the highest representation in the Americas at about 49%. Europe was 23.5%, Africa at 6%, Asia at around 11%. We're baptizing a lot of people in the U.S. So, and then the number of permanent deacons has exploded in Europe, especially in Europe and the U.S. And I guess we'll talk with the deacon about that. The increasing by over 40% in the last 10 years. So, what do you think? So it looks like we're...
I think that's just because, you know, the priests, you know, priesthood is declining. Deacons are, you know, the deacon position is more attractive because you can get married.
Well, that's a whole, I mean, that's a whole other thing. We can do a podcast on that about, like, I mean, because it's a practice in the church. I think about, though, is, St. Paul talked about, you know, that the man who is married, you know, he has to worry about his wife. And then I think about how much we pay priests. And, I'm like, yeah, nobody's going to want their, unless they're extremely pious, they're not going to want their husband working for them on the salary that we pay priests. So there's another priest that talked about, in terms of confession, you know, if I tell somebody in a couple something, I'm pretty sure they're going to tell, like, their husband or wife.
Oh, yeah. I think that you should just, like, assume that.
So, yeah. So that's the thing, though, is that there was a priest that said when he was actually a chaplain in the, you know, he was in the military, and his men said, hey, you know, if you were married, there's no way we tell you all the stuff we tell you, because we assume you'd tell your wife, even though, you know, priests take a vow, you know, vow of silence on that, right? And, or a vow of, you know, confidentiality.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, there's definitely, people have their priorities, right? And priests are available, basically. I mean, they're not thinking, oh, my kid's, my kid's, you know, piano recitals tonight. I can't go to that. Like, they're always, they got nothing better, you know, they got nothing better to do. They gotta be,
that's true.
If somebody's dying at 3 a.m, they gotta be there. It's not gonna be, oh, my wife's gonna give me grief.
Well, I mean, I guess their mind is not elsewhere, and there's something to be said for that.
Yeah, they don't have, they don't have divided priorities. But, like, there's the whole thing
of
the
chair, Joe.
Oh, sorry, I'm squeaking my chair. So, no, well, the one thing, we were talking about this the other day, is that there are Anglican priests that have converted with wives, and they're now Catholic priests.
They tried to get out,
that's sort of around
the system.
They kind of got around
like
it.
A loophole. I can't believe that they allowed it.
It's a bit of a loophole. It's not that common. I think it's less than 1% of the priests.
Seems like this bizarre thing.
The whole thing is, it's a practice, it's a practice of the church. It's not a, doctrine of the church. So there's dogma in terms of the hierarchy, right? There's dogma of the church. There's the doctrine of the church, and then there's the practice of the church. So a practice is the least, what you would call the least hallowed, you know, the least entrenched positions of the church, right? Dogma is something that will never change. A practice can be changed. It may or may not be likely to change. In terms of, like I said, I mean, in terms of people discerning, I mean, it's kind of that, I want to do both of these, basically. One friend told me capitalism is, do you want the soup or the salad? Well, I want both. So it's kind of, I mean, marriage is a good thing, and it's sort of, G.K. Chesterton said that Puritans give up things because they think they're bad, but Catholics give up things because they think they're good. That we give up good things, we don't give up bad things. And like for Lent, you shouldn't give up something that's a sin, you should give up something that's actually good, because it's a sacrifice. So, but.
No, who says that? I think, I know a lot of Catholics.
Chesterton.
They give up things that are sin.
Yeah, no, but that's the point, though. They're not supposed to be doing those anyway, right? So they're not, like, you're supposed to give up something that's a good, that's a sacrifice. Giving up something that's already bad isn't a sacrifice. Like, you're not, because a sacrifice is to make something holy, like to give something to God.
There's a lot of bad things that are, that you enjoy, probably.
Exactly, but they're not.
So that is a sacrifice.
But they're not something that you're sacrificing.
That's a sacrifice.
You could call it that. It's something that you shouldn't be doing anyway. I mean, it's good for you to not have it in the first place, right? But in terms of, but the point is with marriage, it's that they're not giving up something bad, they're giving up something good, right? I mean, so it is a sacrifice. If it wasn't good, it wouldn't be that great to give it up. So, but, I mean, like, if you say when you,
is
like
that it, why? Is that why that it's considered a sacrifice, and that is why that's why they're not allowed to get married? I don't know if that's the case.
That's a sacrifice, right? We talk about offering things up as sacrifices, right?
In general, but that doesn't mean that's why.
No, I mean, that's one of the.
That's why priests aren't allowed to get married, because they shouldn't have to make this sacrifice.
No, but not that it's, but them giving up marriage is not
in general, a sacrifice, yeah.
Yeah. But I'm just saying it's not a. In engineering, it's interesting. We're used to the idea of a trade-off. Mm-hmm. That is always, if you give up one thing, you get another,
right? Right.
And sometimes, though, I mean, and in this case, I think they are getting something for giving up something, but there is the idea of giving up something and not getting anything in terms of earthly terms, right? That's not common in the culture, general culture of, oh, well, if I give this up, I should get that, right? like I said, as an engineer, we're not used to thinking of, I'm used to thinking of trade-offs, not of like, oh, giving us something up and not getting anything for it, right? Economically, we always think of trade-offs or trade or something like that, right? So we're going to interview Deacon Guadalupe. Like I said, so the deacon was a cop at one point. So have you ever had any run-in with the cops?
Deacon Guadalupe.
No, with Deacon himself. Oh, there's another topic we'll have to talk with him about. But, never had a run-in
I do not like policemen. I'm just going to throw that out there.
You don't,
boom, like a nuclear blast.
See, you didn't say,
Well, no, I didn't.
You didn't say that in front of the deacon.
I didn't say that in front of the deacon.
I would have just, if it were me, I would have said it. If I had a problem, I would have, I don't like, when I don't like country music, I tell people to play country music.
He was like sitting across from me all smiley, so.
Nice guy. Extremely nice guy. Good man.
Yeah.
Where would we be without police though? Anarchy. We'd have anarchy. Disorganization.
Surely these are not the only two options. Police or anarchy.
No, not a police state, but you need somebody to enforce the laws, right? If you don't have somebody to enforce the laws, there's no point in having laws. So, there was somebody wrote, somebody said that, on the, you can fact check this, ensure the fact checker, but, I think it's in the Library of Congress. It's a quote from Alexander Pope, and it said, order is the first law of heaven. That organization, having, things be orderly is actually a godly thing. And it always reminded me of, I don't know if you ever read Paradise Lost, but, during the battle, there was a battle in heaven. And God's throne was never, the fallen angels were attacking, the rest of the heavenly host, and the only thing that didn't move was God's throne. But then, as a counterpoint to that, Satan's throne in hell is called Pandemonium. And one of the things they say is wherever there's Satan, there's chaos. That chaos goes with, C.S. Lewis talks about that, the chaos goes with hell. That, like, disorganization, and if there's disorganization and chaos and craziness in your life, that's not from God. Like, God doesn't cause chaos.
That's an interesting, I guess, way to look at it. But, as far as what differentiates chaos from order is, like, basically perspective, or, like, having the eye for order in the chaos.
There is, in terms of chaos, you can get into fractal theory and things. Yeah, but I'm talking in terms of, like, society and in terms of that, an order.
That's a very relative thing.
Only in a relativistic framework. That's a postmodern thought, total relativism. So.
I'm not a relativist at all, really. Not much of one.
But in terms of, we can only go so far down this path before we
banter.
But anyway, I like Deacon Guadalupe.
He
is a good guy.
Resolved.
Exactly. Okay. All right, so we'll take a break and we'll be back with our buddy, Deacon Guadalupe.
John 21:15-17. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." He said to him, "Feed my lambs." He then said to him a second time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." He said to him, "Tend my sheep." He said to him the third time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter was distressed that he had said to him a third time, "Do you love me?" And he said to him, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my sheep." If you were Peter in this story, how would you respond to the Lord? How is the shepherd calling you? Join us at the 3rd annual Awaken Your Spirit Retreat, June 1st and 2nd at Cedar Break Retreat Center in Belton, Texas. This year's theme is Living Our Fiat in Today's Culture. There will be talks, sacraments, and time for prayer and reflection. For more information, visit legionofmaryaustin.org and look for Awaken Your Spirit in the events calendar. Registration closes May 27th.
All right, so... So this week, we're here with Deacon Guadalupe, and, welcome, Deacon.
Thank you. looking forward to.
Yeah, it's great. It's great to have you on. You actually, and I want to acknowledge that my co-host Dolores.
Hi, Joe.
I didn't forget you. I was just talking with the deacon. Sorry. And so yeah, so you're our first ordained person on the show, actually.
Thank you for the honor.
Yeah, so it's great. I've been talking with the Vicar General, so you know he hasn't excommunicated me yet. So it sounds good. It's all on the up and up. It's all on the above board. So now we have Feast of Corpus Christi coming up soon, and you wanted to talk a little bit about that, right?
Absolutely, it's very important for the church. We celebrated June 2nd on a Sunday. And here at St. Mary Cathedral, it's going to be at the 9:30 Mass. And then the procession is going to follow.
Okay.
But this year, Pope Francis has even added something special to it. He added a holy hour at the cathedral. We're going to celebrate it on Saturday at 4 p.m. The bishop himself is going to come and celebrate it.
Okay.
So great. I wanted to just mention those two additions. And I think it's kind of historic because the last time a pope asked the church to celebrate something universal was in 1264.
Wow.
Which is the beginning of Feast of Corpus Christi.
Okay.
So now we have Pope Francis asking the whole church to celebrate the Feast of Corpus Christi with a holy hour.
Yeah.
Aside from the procession.
And but there is at least last year, the last couple of years, there's been a procession through the city.
Yes.
Before, I guess they are in, they arrive in time for the 1:30 Mass, the 1:45 Mass.
For some years now, the Spanish young adults, led by Father Jesus, they have been having processions from either the east end, from Our Lady of Guadalupe, to the cathedral. Mm-hmm. And lately, the last couple of years, they've been traveling from the south through Congress to the cathedral.
Okay.
It's quite a large procession. Our procession goes from the cathedral to the Capitol. And then back, and
okay.
We have altars in between.
Yeah.
And this year, for the first time,
I don't remember us doing that procession in the past.
That's correct.
Or
this is the third
okay.
annual, right?
Okay.
So the cathedral didn't have an English procession.
Yeah.
And
okay.
So, although this is feast, the church has been doing this for 749 years.
Yeah.
And so yes.
And I understand. So I have a friend from Monterrey. Okay, I'm being a poser pronouncing it that way, but yeah, from Monterey. And, my friend, we call her Mary Terry. Muddy Teddy. But she said that she asked me once, what are you guys doing for Corpus Christi? Cause back in Mexico, it's a huge thing.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yes.
The whole community is you know, like Christmas or something, right? And,
they have
here,
children put flowers on as Jesus is passing, they throw petals to Jesus.
Yeah.
There's bells ringing.
So that's the thing, is that it's, back there, it's pretty huge. Here, it's, you know, Feast of the Church, I guess. I don't know if it's a solemnity or a feast.
It's a solemnity. The official name is the Solemnity of the Most Holy Body and Blood of Jesus Christ. That's
okay.
The official. But, normally it's referred to as the Feast of Corpus Christi.
Okay, and solemnities, there's a whole hierarchy. Solemnity is the highest.
Feast is the lowest, but.
Yeah.
Throughout the church, they've referred to it as Feast of Corpus Christi, and it kind of stuck, so people refer to it that way, but it is a solemnity. The highest form of celebrating a feast.
And I'm sorry, you said, are they starting from Our Lady of Guadalupe, you said?
This year, I think they're starting from St. Ignatius, the Spanish young adults.
Okay.
But ours from the cathedral starts from the cathedral to the capital and back to the but what's different this year is that... The hour.
Yeah.
We start at 9:30. It's 9:30 Mass, and then the procession immediately follows. Mm-hmm. But Senator Lucio went ahead and reserved the Capitol for us, the actual top of the stairs. So we'll be able to celebrate, place an altar there, place our Lord there.
Great.
And kind of make him king of the city.
Definitely. And that's, it reminds me in San Antonio that the cathedral is considered the center of the city. All buildings are measured distance from the center of the altar in San Antonio. But the, I mean, we had something similar at UCC. We had a Eucharist procession up to the UT Tower, steps of the UT Tower and back. So this is good. We're bringing Jesus out to the world.
Yes.
So, yeah.
It's important. When people see Jesus, their lives are changed in some way, form, or fashion, even if they don't realize it. I brought a copy of the Saint Niels Stinson, mm-hmm. who was the, he's the father of geology and father of paleontology. And he's from 1638, and he was a atheist, scientist, didn't believe in God, and ran into a Corpus Christi procession, and he was just shocked.
Huh.
And this was the beginning of his conversion, this Corpus Christi procession.
That's interesting.
Of course, this is in the 17th century.
Yeah.
But it happens every time. Where when Jesus, it's like when Mary Magdalene or when Zacchaeus met Jesus, there's something that happens.
Yeah.
Last year, during the procession, and I thought it was beautiful. Some people in the procession were kind of shocked, but some of the bystanders,
Yeah, they always want to know what's going on here. I never saw something like this before in the secular world, right? What's going on?
And two people said, they're worshiping the sun god, you know, but I thought it was beautiful in the sense that at least they recognized that there was worship in there.
Yeah.
They didn't know what was happening. You know, they just, this sunburst object, you know. But it was beautiful that they at least recognized the sense of worship, you know. So, yes. Dolores, you're too quiet.
No, I'm...
She's listening.
I'm taking it all in. So when is it again?
This is June 2nd.
June 2nd, okay.
9:30, St. Mary Cathedral. Huh. And it's really important. John Paul, when he spoke of the procession, he spoke of it in terms of it's time to receive joy, or he spoke of it in terms of receiving inexhaustible source of blessings. That's how he spoke of it. You know,
yeah.
It's a time where Jesus pours his heart out. You know, up until 1955, it was an octave in the church. You know, we have an octave in Christmas, octave in Easter.
Yeah.
Imagine we would celebrate this feast for 8 days. That's how important it's been to the church up until 1955.
Hmm.
And now we're going to add a holy hour, as Pope Francis is asking the whole church to do that as a way of celebrating. And I think it's important because it allows you to just be before the Lord, an experience that most people don't have of, you know, when Jesus tells the two sisters, Martha and Mary,
One's very busy.
Yeah.
And the other one's just sitting there with Jesus. Yeah.
And she's chosen the better part.
Yeah.
And kind of Pope Francis is asking us to choose a better part to come and meet the Lord, which sometimes in our busy life, you know, in the rat race, we just forget what it's like to be in his presence.
Yeah.
And in this case, the bishop himself is going to lead the special holy hour, Saturday, 4 p.m. So I'm giving you two dates. Sorry for the confusion.
No, that's good. Yeah,
it's worth celebrating it.
They can come. The people that usually come for 5:30 p.m. Saturday Mass, they can come a little early and go to the hour 4 to 5, and then stick around for 5:30 Mass.
Right? And in fact, the bishop himself is going to celebrate Mass also. 5:30.
Okay.
So it's a double.
Oh, he's keeping himself busy this that weekend. So
he's a very holy bishop.
He is
wonderful bishop.
He washed my feet once. It was it was interesting. Whenever he washed, as he was going down the line washing people's feet, what he did is, he sort of focused on the foot, right? And then he'd hold the foot for a second and look right in the guy in your eyes, just so you knew he's making a connection to you, personally. It's not, and for a second or, you know, for a little while, like, his focus is all on you, not on everybody in the cathedral that night. So, you had that feeling of humility, coming, especially during, that was supposed to be a very humbling thing to do, right? So.
Yeah, he washed my feet this last,
Paschal
Mystery during on Holy Thursday. And you're right. He makes eye contact with you. It's a beautiful gesture. Yes.
And the thing is, I was actually hoping that he wouldn't make a big deal about the you know, I was like, you don't want to be in the center of it. But okay, I know I act like I want to be, but I'd like to be on the, you know, sort of in the background somewhere, right, and then sitting in the middle of the cathedral staring at everybody. And I'm sitting beside my friend Camille, and I said, I hope he doesn't make a big deal about this. And and the whole homily was about how important the foot washing was. He goes, yeah, not a chance. He's going to make a big deal. So, great, okay. So, we'll put info on the website about the Corpus Christi thing, and we'll get people out there. And, yeah, it's an amazing thing. I mean, I was even thinking, when I was visiting Corpus Christi, I'm like, well, how many people who live in Corpus Christi know that it means body of Christ? I mean, it was, you know, named for that. And, I always wondered about that, is, you know, how many know that, or think about that. So,
they have at one point they had up to 17 adoration chapels there in the diocese of Corpus Christi.
Yeah. And now we have
12 in our diocese.
But we have perpetual,
That's correct.
So yeah, perpetual. We have 12 perpetual? Okay. In the diocese. And then in the city itself, though, what about 5 there, right, roughly? Because we have...
Sacred Heart.
Okay, Sacred... Oh, yeah, I know Emmaus, St. Louis, San Jose, St. Williams...
Buda.
And Sacred Heart.
Right.
So that's... So, yeah. That's... Yeah, it's amazing. I know I'd heard... They talked about they sit in the city of Boston. They finally have perpetual adoration for the first time in 40 years.
Wow.
Which I said in the city of Boston? What? I mean, in Austin... I have 5 within 20 minutes.
Hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay. St. Catherine of Siena, too.
You know, we're the country with the most perpetual adoration chapels.
Hmm.
There's a total of about close to 6,000, and we have more than 50% of them.
Wow.
I met the priest who originally started this movement of perpetual adoration, Father Martin Lucia.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Amazing. We'll do a podcast on why perpetual, you know, why having that available is, you know, just on adoration itself.
Absolutely.
We'll have to do a talk about that. So, cool. Great. All right. Well, we'll take a break and then we'll get back and we want to talk more about now you, your background.
So. You're on.
All right. We'll be back in a minute.
Joe's People is brought to you in part by Austin Editing. Austin Editing provides quality editorial services on an as-needed basis to businesses and individuals in the Austin area and beyond. Why not let Austin Editing handle your document in regards to writing, editing, and any specialized formatting requirements while you focus on the most important part, the content? Contact Austin Editing today at 512-655-WRDS. That's 512-655-9737. Or at austinediting.net on the web. And like us on Facebook.
All right. So we're back, with my good co-host Dolores and Deacon Guadalupe. And so, so I wanted to focus on you for a little, Deacon. So now where are you from originally?
I am from Heberville, Texas. That is in the heart of the Wild Horse Desert in South Texas.
Okay.
It's in the middle between Corpus Christi and Laredo.
Okay, yeah.
I was a school teacher, taught chemistry, physics, human anatomy, biology for 7 years and then I went to work for the pro-life movement 2.5 years.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
And then I was in law enforcement for 7 years. And
that's an interesting career track.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
I've been a deacon for 6 years. So I've been around.
Huh.
Yes.
So now, that was one thing actually, they said there's an explosion of, oh, this is off topic a little bit. There's an explosion of permanent deacons in the U.S. There's been a 30% increase or something recently.
We have.
And there's a lot of permanent deacons.
Worldwide, we have the most deacons.
Hmm.
When the program was brought back into the church after Vatican II,
mm-hmm.
The U.S. ran with the ball immediately and developed a program. The other countries were kind of like, let's wait and see.
There was a point where we didn't have, I mean, I know Vatican II removed a lot. There was like a sub-deacon and there was like a bunch of levels, right, that Vatican II got rid of, right?
The permanent diaconate up to the 9th century.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the 9th century, it just kind of just died out.
And it used to just be bishops and deacons, right? There wasn't a priest, right?
There's two types of deacons, transitional deacon and permanent deacon.
Yeah.
The transitional deacon is going to become a priest eventually.
Oh, no, but I mean, it used to be in the early church, there used to be a bishop, it used to be head of the church, and there used to be deacons, right?
Yes, because the deacon is very close to the bishop.
Yeah.
Bishop Vasquez says, we're united at the hip.
that's his
joke.
Yes. Okay.
There's supposed to be throughout the history of the church, there's a special spiritual relationship between the deacon and the priest. We're first ordained for the bishop.
Okay.
To serve the bishop. Yes.
All right. And then, so you went law enforcement to deacon. And,
yes. That was fun.
I mean, so that's, So why did you go from, especially why did you go from like, from the pro-life movement into law enforcement? I mean.
I think the quickest way is to just follow the Lamb. That's what it says in the book of Revelation. So.
Yeah.
You go where the Lord leads you. If you have a prayer life, then he has a marvelous road for you to discover, an adventure every day. And for me, that's how it's been. How I made the transfer from law enforcement to diaconate. I was in an adoration chapel and I felt the Lord calling me to that vocation. And when I first heard the voice, not in your ear, but in your heart, you know, with the ears of your heart, you think like, no, this is not what I want.
Yeah.
Just cause you're just shocked. And anyway, I just kept on hearing that.
And somebody said, Father James John Gesualdo, he said if you hear that and it's not something you want to do, then you know it's not you.
Right.
Right. Because if it's like, oh, yeah, you should do it, right? If you're thinking that. And self-love. Like, oh, yeah.
Selfishness.
Yeah, then it's not. But if it's like, if you keep hearing it, the tap on the shoulder, then you're like, no, I don't want to do that. No, what are you talking about? Or, I'm not the guy, right? Then it's got to be from something outside of yourself then, right?
Exactly. So. Kind of like the words of Peter when he says, depart from me, O Lord, for I am a sinful man. You know, when Jesus fills his boat with fish, kind of like he realizes this is a miracle. And you're asking me to follow you, you know. And the first reaction from Peter is, depart from me, O Lord, I am a sinful man.
Yeah. So now
Dolores is about to say something.
Oh yeah, sorry, go ahead.
I'm just here being prickly, I guess, but I don't think that just because, it's outside, just because you don't have there's like kind of another consciousness where you hear something and then you hear a call or you hear, you know, something and you don't necessarily want to do it. I don't think that in itself is kind of like.
No, it's another confirmation. There's multiple things, right?
But I mean, surely like there's a lot of, okay, like let's take it on the negative thing. Like let's say you have this desire to do something that is not a good thing. And then you have the side of yourself, like your consciousness that is kind of like, you know, don't do that, even though you want to do it.
Yeah, there's
you wouldn't say that's the devil.
No,
right?
Well,
and that's where discernment.
You know what I mean? You wouldn't say that that's the devil. So I don't think you should.
And that's where
discernment. Exactly.
There's components of you that are at odds. Yeah. You could argue there's temptation.
Like for me, so. I went and saw my spiritual director.
Right? Yeah.
And he confirmed it, you know.
How does that go for a spiritual director? That must be hard,
it's somebody who is close to God and mm-hmm. who knows you, and whom in the life of the church, many saints have just taken the word of their spiritual director. Of course, when you're making a decision, there should be peace.
Right.
You know, if there isn't any peace, then it might be the enemy.
That's the Ignatian thing, right? You take a step in that direction. If there's peace and joy, then you're going in the right direction. Right?
The great saint of the church, the little flower, you know, she received her vocation at 4 years old. And right the night before she took her final vows, her perpetual vows, the enemy attacked her and said, you're a fraud. All this thing is just, you know, you're just not real. So she went and knocked on the Mother Superior's door, her spiritual director, and she said, you know, I'm not receiving vows tomorrow. I'm a fraud. I'm this and that.
Yeah.
And she said, Therese, close the door. Go back to your receiving vows. And she thanks God. You know, she was just under attack, you know.
Yeah.
So that's when you know it's either the voice of God or the enemy.
And that's the thing. Even the Pope has a confessor. And, I don't know if you'd say he has a spiritual director, but,
Well, I'm sure he does. They all
yeah, have. He should have to have a spiritual director, right? So, yeah. So.
That's a great input, Dolores.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got, somebody told me once that God was calling me to do something, and that's one of the reasons I was like, I don't think God's calling me to do this, and they're like, I really think God's calling you to do this.
You know.
No, I don't think so.
The Feast of Corpus Christi was started by a 16-year-old. She had visions, and for 20 years she kind of denied them. And finally she told a bishop, and that bishop ended up becoming Pope Urban. So, you know,
wow. Okay.
How coincidences work, but that's how, you know, a teenager was having this vision. And that's why we have the Feast of Corpus Christi.
Still plugging the Corpus Christi,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. We got to promote the Lord. Okay.
So we're back in full circle. Which reminds me.
By the way,
no,
June.
Well, I wanted to ask, because it's an interesting, you know, juxtaposition of you know, a deacon that used to be in law enforcement. So, I mean, what was it like? You see a lot of the ugliness and evil in the world, obviously. Yes. And, you know, you have to bring the light of Jesus to that situation, right? You know, what did it teach you about, what was your experience? I mean, what did it teach you about humanity?
A lot. I mean, if I was going to find the most fun and adventure, I would say it was my law enforcement career. That would be the highlight of adventure.
Yeah.
Good versus evil. That was definitely the highlight. Because I ended up praying. When I was in law enforcement, I prayed a lot more. I would spend like sometimes 3 hours before the Blessed Sacrament. As long as I did my job was narcotics and like bringing in people with millions of dollars and things like that. And as long as I did my job, my boss left me alone. But it was fun. It was an adventure. And then the Lord called me out of that, and I just said, okay, wherever you want to take me.
No, I had to ask you the question. Oh, sorry, can I sneak one in?
Yeah.
no, the question, I mean, have you ever had, did you have to shoot anybody when you're in
there? No, by the grace of God, came very close many a times because when you deal with that kind of, criminal element, there's a lot of dangerous situations. But I thank God that that never happened, but, you know, the church justifies that in the catechism, you know, for self-defense or for the protection of others.
Mm-hmm.
You have a duty to protect, you know, because you're, many people have the misconception, well, if you're a Christian, well, that means you can't defend yourself or defend others.
You have to be a total pacifist, basically.
Exactly.
So, I mean, that's the theology, but were you able to make peace with that also, like personally? Were you?
Yes, absolutely. Yes, I did. Never had questions. In fact, most of the time I was just too merciful, too kind.
I care too much.
Care too much.
That is the...
No, I can imagine though being pulled over and I see you get out of your car. What are you, 6'4" or so?
I'm 6'1".
No. Oh, 6'1"? Okay, it seemed... And I'm like, yeah, no, I don't, like, the first thought's not gonna be, this guy's gonna be merciful. Like, that's not.
Well, I mean, the first thing that you think of when a cop being a uniform and pulls you over is not, this guy's gonna be merciful.
The things that would get me in trouble were, you're giving out too many warning tickets.
Too many warnings, not overall tickets. Jeez. Yeah. Just give him some penance or something, maybe. You know.
Yeah. But so I wasn't a deacon then. Once I,
yeah. Once no, I, no, I know. I'm just joking. Yeah. So you had a question.
No, I wanted to know if there was a moment that you knew that you were being called.
Oh, yes.
A specific moment. And can you tell us about it?
Yeah.
If there was a specific moment.
Yeah. I remember clearly there's two specific moments before the Blessed Sacrament where the first moment I just got up and left. I said, I've been here too long. I'm hearing things. Yeah. And I came back in the same thing. And, finally I got enough courage to mention it to my priest and my pastor. I said, by the way, I think, you know, and he said, oh, I knew that already.
What?
Yeah. In the sense that he had thought, well, this guy will make a good deacon, right?
Yeah.
You know, so he wasn't surprised. I was.
Great. Well, this is great. So yeah, so we got our advertising in now for Corpus Christi. We're encouraging people. And, it's good to fill in the background and get to know more about you. See, I get to ask all the questions I don't normally get to ask, right? So, this is all good. Yeah. So,
but I'll turn it back into Corpus Christi.
Yeah, I know.
the 6 degrees of Corpus Christi.
No, the only joke I was going to make is, see, we have canon lawyers, so we should have like canon police too. You know, we could have.
I taught at the police academy.
A canon deputy.
Oh, you know. Yeah.
Part time, you know, because policemen don't make good money, but, so part time I taught at the police academy for 3 years. I did that. I taught report writing and communicating with criminals or with
communicating with criminals. I like that.
It's like another species.
That's a good topic. Great. All right. Well, great. So it was good to have you on.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks again. Yes. And yeah, we'll have to have you on again. We'll to talk about adoration. That'd be a good one.
Yes. Dolores, do you believe it is the Lord? What looks like bread, tastes like bread. Is it the Lord?
What?
I'll put her on the spot.
Put her on the spot. No, I'm saying in the future we'll have to do, whole show. But yeah.
Oh, okay. I'll save it.
We'll make sure
that answer for
them. Yeah, she can just save that answer.
It'll be the mystery. Does Dolores actually think?
Yeah, it'll be a cliffhanger.
Really, yes, it's really the Lord. That would be the cliffhanger. All right. Tune in next week.
Yeah. All right, great. Well, thanks for being on the show.
All righty. Perfect.
Are you looking for the best Catholic content on the web or wondering how your parish or ministry can take advantage of social and new media? Hi, I'm Jason Elizondo, co-founder of Austin Catholic New Media. Our team of bloggers, podcasters, and new media experts are dedicated to serving the church and spreading her message of God's love and mercy. We connect Catholics and collaborate on new and existing media projects in the Central Texas area. We promote and highlight the great things that Catholics are doing with new media in the Diocese of Austin and beyond. Our team is here to help educate your parish or ministry by providing education, support, and consultation on how to use new and social media to further your mission. We host the award-winning Two Guys to Grow on a Catholic podcast and are home of the best collection of bloggers and podcasters in the Austin Diocese. If you'd like to find out more about Austin Catholic New Media, make sure you check out our website, austincnm.com. That's austincnm.com.
Gerard Manley Hopkins, 1844-1889, God's Grandeur. The world is charged with the grandeur of God. It will flame out like shining from shook foil. It gathers to a greatness like the ooze of oil crushed. Why do men then now not wreck his rod? Generations have trod, have trod, have trod, and all is seared with trade, bleared, smeared with toil, and wears man's smudge, and shares man's smell. The soil is bare now, nor can foot feel being shod. And for all this, nature is never spent. There lives the dearest freshness deep down things. And though the last lights off the black west went, O morning, at the brown brink eastward springs, because the Holy Ghost over the bent world broods with warm breast and with awe bright wings.
All right, we've come to the end of the show for this week. I want to thank Deacon Guadalupe of St. Mary Cathedral for being on the show this week. Also, thanks to my good friend Dolores Diaz for being my co-host, and also thanks to Sam for being our announcer, and also thanks to Eric Jenis for giving us permission to use the poetry segments from his CD, Images of Grace. Please like us on Facebook at facebook.com/joespeople, and also share us on Facebook. Sharing is caring. Find us on the web at joespeople.com, and we're also on iTunes. Just look for Joe's People. I want to say thanks to all our fans out there on the interwebs. I know we're reaching folks all over the U.S. and the world. We like hearing from you, so feel free to post and just say hi on our Facebook page or our website. And thank you all for joining us for a little while in our walk with God. And that's all till next time. So this is Joe Geisler saying God bless and good night from Austin, Texas.